In his novel called The Piano Tuner, Daniel Mason tells the story of a British piano tuner summoned to the jungles of Burma to tune a rare Erard piano. Set in the late 1800s, the novel is as much about colonialism and coming of age as it is about tuning the piano. Surprisingly, Daniel Mason wrote the novel while he was in medical school. Anne Strainchamp sat down with him to find out more.
I think I read that the idea for the book actually began with the piano itself.
Right. It began very much with the image of a piano. At some point, for some reason, I thought of the image of a piano in the jungle. I maybe have heard of it somewhere. I definitely heard of other Western instruments or Western objects. In the East, there's a great story of an American botanist who would bring his bathtub with him wherever he would go. Or, you know, there's an opera house in Manaus, and maybe that influenced it. But it began with a piano, and that quickly moved to a piano tuner because it was necessary. I wrote a small piece about a pianist bringing a piano into
Yeah, I was going to say, why not a pianist? If you have a piano, now you'd want a pianist, right? But you chose a piano tuner.
Well, I actually started out with a pianist, a man who loved a piano, and he brought a piano into Burma. And that actually appears in the book in Dr. Carroll's letter about how the piano actually got there. But immediately, I mean, almost immediately after writing a page, I realized that this instrument would be in terrible shape by the time it got there. It would be out of tune. I was going to have to bring a piano tuner in eventually.
Did you know anything about piano tuning before you wrote the book?
No, I didn't know anything about it. And so I went and I read, my major source was a book called Piano Tuning and Allied Arts. And so I just read how one goes about tuning a piano and what are the main things that go wrong with a piano. And it's funny, at first when I started out, I thought that it was this very mechanical task. And now I have this incredible amount of respect for piano tuners. I mean, it's really sort of a sublime art in a way, to be able to take something that's wood and metal and string and broken down and beaten up and turn it into something that just the touch of somebody else's fingers can make beautiful.
It's some of the most beautiful passages in the book are the ones where Edgar Drake, the piano tuner, is either working on the piano, or especially when you write about the way he hears sound. Is that a way you hear also, or did you have to think yourself into what it would be like to be a piano tuner?
I think I had to think more of what it would be like to be a tuner, that his relationship to sound is a little bit different from what my relationship is. When I listen to the music that he listens to, it's only an aesthetic appreciation. It sounds good, or it makes me feel good, and I like it, or it's fun. But I think that since he works with it all the time, all of a sudden, a note is not a note. It's the note, and the out-of-tune notes that became it. And so he listens more to the interaction of notes. He can hear when it's out of tune more often. And so he really dissects the music, I think. He's hearing more than what I hear.
Does it affect what he hears just in the ordinary day-to-day world also, do you think?
I think so. I think that he's very caught up in his relationship to music, and that is, one is an enabler of music, a repairer of music. He attaches not just sentiment to song, so he doesn't hear a song and think this is a sad song, but he has a habit of attaching song to sentiment. So if he's feeling sad, then that actually makes him think of a particular piece. So it's a way that he filters the world in many ways.
Oh, yeah, there's a wonderful moment, isn't there, when he says to his wife, who's still his fiancée, he's trying to tell her what meeting her has meant to him, and he says it makes him feel like a particular piece of music.
Right, that's right. There's a part in the book where he tells her that meeting her...
Maybe you should read that part.
Sure, I can read that. They're sitting by the river, and it's right before he leaves, and Edgar thinks, ever since he was a boy, he had the habit of attaching not only sentiment to song, but song to sentiment. Catherine learned this in a letter he wrote to her soon after visiting her home for the first time, in which he described his emotions as being like the allegro con brio of Haydn's Sonata No. 50 in D major. At the time, she had laughed and wondered whether he was actually serious or if this were only the sort of joke that apprentice piano tuners enjoyed. Her friends, for their part, decided that surely it was a joke, if a strange one, and she found herself agreeing until later she bought the music for the sonata and played it, and from the piano, newly tuned, came the song of giddy anticipation that made her think of butterflies, not the kind that follow spring, but rather the pale, flittering shadows that live in the stomachs of those who are young and in love.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Thanks.
Do you have a musical background?
I don't have a musical background, only listening.
Has writing the book changed your feeling about music or your connection to it?
Absolutely. It's one of the best, I think, parts about writing this. Bach, for instance, Bach's pieces play a very important part in the book. I think no one can become 26 without hearing at least some Bach and liking some Bach. But I can't say I listen to it regularly. But in studying piano tuning a little bit, I learned the piano tuners very often after they've tuned and equally tempered a piano, they equally space the keys. So the piano can be played in many different keys. They'll play the well-tempered clavier, which has pieces played in every key. And so it's a way to test to see if the piano has been equally tempered. And so that's actually the reason why I chose the well-tempered clavier to be sort of the theme of the book, the piece that Edgar plays and thinks about, is because it's a piano tuner's piece.
Well, and then at the beginning of the book, in the first page, you quote the definition of the word fugue, because the well-tempered clavier is a fugue.
Right. There's this wonderful double meaning to the word fugue that I actually hadn't realized until very late in the process of writing. So I actually have the quote here. There's fugue, which literally means flight. And one definition, the musical definition, is that it's a polyphonic composition constructed on one or more short subjects or themes which are harmonized according to the laws of counterpoint and introduced from time to time with various contrapuntal devices. So that's Oxford English Dictionary. And that's what I'd used for most of my entire book, the idea that here you have a piece of music which involves sort of different small pieces that overlap with each other and are reintroduced at various points in time.
So the book has the structure, the musical structure of a fugue.
Right, exactly. And Edgar hears stories early on, which later remanifest themselves in other ways. They have familiarity to him, and he doesn't exactly know why. And he remarks a couple times that maybe these are all just retellings of the same story over and over again. In his case, it's the story of a journey. The other meaning of a fugue is one that I think I should have known earlier, just studying medicine. It's a psychiatric definition of a fugue. It's a fugue state, a psychiatric condition in which a person enters sort of a state, flees where they are, ends up often in another community, distant from home, without knowing what happened to them. And of course,
and this is what happens to your character,
exactly,
Edgar, who winds up in Burma, not quite knowing how he got there or what he's doing there, and
right.
yet feels somehow that he can't leave.
Right. Exactly.
It's a book, you know, not just about a piano and a piano tuner, but very much about an encounter between a man steeped in the Western classical music tradition and the East and the whole aesthetic of the East. I'm assuming this is because you had this encounter yourself as a medical student and researcher spending time in Thailand. Is that right?
Right. I think that initially the drive to write the book very much came from my own experience. I'd spent a year over there on the border. I never been that far away from home before, and was just suddenly introduced to an entirely new place, an entirely new language, an entirely new history, and really fell in love. The history is fascinating. The people are incredibly nice. And when I came home and started school again, it was my first year of medical school, and although it was very interesting, my daily life in school was to go to the library and sort of sit down and try to memorize long lists. And I began to feel, after some time, the incredible absence of the previous experience. And so I think that I began to write because of that absence to try to capture what I'd felt before, which was sort of increasingly feeling distant.
What about the imagination or the gift of a piano tuner? Is there a way in which being a physician is a bit like being to the human body what a piano tuner is to a piano?
Right. Yeah, I think that comparison probably is very appropriate. And Dr. Carroll in the book remarks on that, says tuning's sort of another form of cure, right? It's what attracted me to piano tuning in the first place. It's this process of enabling. So in a way, a doctor doesn't create a human, but what they do is they allow somebody to just kind of go on and do the things that they were going to do anyway. And so it's the same thing with a piano. If a piano tuner doesn't create the music, at least they create the structure that eventually can be used to make the music.
Daniel Mason's the author of the novel called The Piano Tuner. We spoke with N. Strange Champs.